I'm David Miller, executive producer of Market to Market. Thank you for downloading this Market Plus segment. We'd love a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts. Feel free to send me any feedback to markettomarket@iowapbs.org.
This is the Friday, January 15, 2021 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now, we got people all over the place. I'm having a hard time. If ADD didn't kick in, this certainly did today. Ted Seifert and Don Rose are in the studio. Matt Bennett, Naomi Bloom are remote from their homes. This darn blizzard kind of impacted everybody's travel. Ted, you had your own series of adventures. I got to say first, though, Ted, that's a great looking tie.
Yes. Right. I forgot my tie. Thank you for lending me one.
It's an old. You know how many times, Ted, in all my years.
This is a tie for a much larger person than
it
myself.
It is. I got a much larger neck.
I had such a hard time getting the length where the small part of the tie wasn't hanging down almost to my knees. It was.
And I'm shorter than he is. That's the other part of this. All the years I've taken extra ties and had them hanging out, this is the first time that I actually had to use it.
Ah.
So that was good. It paid off.
That was fun for you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was. Okay. Don and Ted, Naomi and Matt got to answer a question that came in. Chad and Grimes, and this is the one that I know is, as Don would say, the most helpful to people. And it's Chad's question was, the adage is the cure for high prices is high prices. What is your favorite two or three factors that you watch which may signal a fundamental shift to the downside? What do you see, Don?
Well, you know, the number one thing you have to watch is the structure of the market. You know, the rationing and some of these things, the export sales is, you know, kind of a look back. But what you look at, the futures market dials it in. So you watch the spreads, bull spreads, you know, in bull markets. So the front months when they start to relax back, particularly when you look out to the next year, the 21 November versus 22, that'll give you a better look. So that, the other thing that you pay very close attention to is the calls. If the call volume is going down and the price that should be going up on volatility doesn't, and the put volume goes up. So I would watch those two things.
Volatility was something you talked about in the discussion we had. Ted, do you have different factors that you watch?
I like a lot of the things that Don's saying. And you know, a lot of times high volatility can be indicative of topping formations. So, I mean, that's interesting. From a fundamental perspective, I'm not sure fundamentals really matter. This is a climate where the speculative market's kind of taken hold of a bullish story, or what they have been told is a bullish story, in a really good-looking chart. We can keep, if they can keep pushing that higher, regardless of whether the fundamentals really change. Now, that being said, the fundamentals will change, and as we talked about in the regular program, escalator up, elevator down. When it does, we're going to wipe out 2 or 3 months of gains in probably less than 2 weeks. So we have to be very cognizant of that. Now, from a fundamental standpoint, the things that I will be looking for soybeans, obviously export sales is the big one, right? If global end users are willing to step up and continue to pay at these higher prices, that means we haven't done enough to ration demand. And this is the real story, soybeans, because we are in a price rationing situation. That rarely happens in these markets, so it is going to be the leader of the grain complex as a whole. For corn, obviously ethanol, we've talked about it on both sides of things. We want to be bullish ethanol, but there's a lot of concerns that we have. We really need to keep an eye on and what happens with, you know, shutdowns and so on and so forth. But the big thing for me for corn is this shipment number. We have only shipped out 34% of what we have sold so far, which equates to 26% of the USDA target. We are historically low on how much we've shipped of what we've sold this to this point. And if that number doesn't start coming up, then I think we have a problem there in corn. And then we'll start seeing that reflected on the board. So for me, export sales in soybeans, yes, we also want to keep an eye on the crush, and crush margins will be what price rations soybeans rather than actual the price of soybeans. And then for corn, it's really the export shipment number. That's the biggest thing that I want to keep an eye on.
Naomi?
One thing to keep in mind is that our export market has been busy getting those soybeans out of this country. Those shipments have been hot and heavy for beans. And so that, I think, is the reason why the corn exports leaving this country have been behind, because all of those big cargo ships and ocean growing vessels are full of soybeans. So now what you're going to see is a natural progression where export sales start to simmer down, because seasonally, as soon as that South American harvest gets underway, usually our export market dries up. So maybe we have good exports for the next week or 3 weeks, and then naturally it's going to simmer down. And then I think that is when the corn exports are going to move out of this country. And the other thing with corn exports is that the USDA had, prior to this report, the exports at a record amount on paper. So they toned it down a little bit. And I think part of it was that it needed to happen, to some of Ted's point. But the other part is that you're going to see the wheat exports start to really go hot and heavy out of this country. Everything that China grows for corn, they use. Everything that China grows for wheat, they use. And so they need to be importing wheat for feed. They're going to be buying sorghum. They're going to be buying corn. So I'm still optimistic for the export market for the United States.
All right, Matt, you're going to start our energy discussion here now. We've kind of danced around it, but Gary in Franceville, Wisconsin, asked us on Twitter here in the last couple of days. He says, are these high prices the end of ethanol?
Yeah, I know that it's the end of ethanol. Whenever you look at what Secretary Vilsack did with President Obama, there's no doubt that he was viewed as being very friendly towards biofuels. And I think that there's a lot of folks that look at that is a good factor, you know, moving forward, is that, you know, that they're going to try to do whatever they can. Maybe you're not going to get near as many waivers as what you had over the last 4 years. I know there's been a lot of frustration about that, and people are assuming that that's not going to happen moving forward. I don't know that it's the end of the industry, but I will say this. There's no doubt that over the last several years, we've seen that this is a very mature industry. And I don't know that it's one that's going to have a whole lot of growth by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't think it's going to go away quite yet until you get electric vehicles. And if you get electric vehicles in mass quantity, I think you're still going to have a heck of a lot of dependence upon, you know, renewable fuels, things that are friendly to the environment, which ethanol obviously is.
Ted, you always have an opinion on ethanol and energy, but you said something before we started rolling that just popped in what Matt just said, and you talked about the Tesla stock. I mean, if you're looking for an indication of a consumer, they're buying Tesla because they think it's going to perform, or do they really think electric cars are going to be here in the next year or two? How that impacts ethanol.
I honestly didn't know we were going to be analyzing Tesla stocks on the show. Okay, I like the question. I honestly think that a vast majority of people that are buying Tesla aren't buying the car. They're buying a piece of Elon Musk, a piece of, hey, this guy's going to space. He's an innovator. He's one of the bigger innovators of our time, inventors of our time. And I think getting exposure to that is really why a lot of people buy Tesla stock. I just purchased a new vehicle, and a Tesla was on the list of things to test drive. I did. I've got a couple friends that have them. I see that this is a thing that is really coming along, and it is becoming more mainstream. But there are some of us, myself in particular, I can't get rid of the sound of a fantastic V8 engine. It just won't work for me. I have to have that, right? So I think the market share is growing, but I don't think it's something that will completely take over. And as far as the ethanol market's concerned, I really do think that this isn't a 2021 thing. This is a 2022, 23, 24. I think the Biden administration and the Biden EPA is going to be very friendly for biofuels. I think that's going to be very good in the future. But I don't think that's a 2021 thing. I'm worried what happens in 2021. I don't think it wipes out the ethanol industry. But the real benefits, I don't think, happen until 2022.
All right, Don, I got to ask you a question here that came from on Twitter. Bob in Stanbury, Missouri asked us, have you heard of many farmers switching to early beans to catch the September market?
Well, we saw that in South America already. You know, they're going to have some early beans, same type of thing. So most definitely, I think we'll have the same thing up here, probably down south first. So, you know, definitely, I think producers are going to try and take advantage of that price differential between old and new, and that happens most years like this.
All right, Matt, this is a question. You used to be in the elevator business, so you can answer a little bit. Glenn in Bryan, Ohio. Glenn asked us, if forward pricing continues, is there a possibility that some operators or elevators will not be able to make their margin calls or fund their hedge account if the markets continue to climb?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One thing that I guess I draw on is back in that 07, 08 market, you know, a lot of that corn was purchased in the fall well under $4. Then, of course, we know that we ran to you know, $7 plus. And obviously there was a lot of grain that was carrying a significant amount of margin. There's a lot of smaller systems, including like ones that we're involved with, where we actually had to look towards other sources of money, you know, because our local bank actually was having a hard time coming up with what we needed just to cover margin. But it happened. And I think that anybody who understands the way hedging works and the way that these elevators work certainly is going to be able to cover those needs. I think that the money cost of money is very cheap right now, which is a really good thing, I think, for anybody in that situation, because it's going to lower your cost of operating somewhat. But I want to real quick, like, say something about the bean question, because there's no doubt in my mind, Bob asked a good question. I kind of joked around with him about it. But you know what? Bean basis is going to be screaming heading into harvest next year. I would bet money on it. You know, and any producer who does have a chance to get in the field early, if they've got the opportunity to potentially get some beans where they're harvesting very early in the grow in the harvest time frame, I think they're going to be handsomely rewarded.
All right, Naomi, we did get a couple of questions via Facebook, and this one came from Justin in Ithaca, Michigan. Hogs, fat cattle, and dairy sector. He said they all rely heavily on the grain markets. Which sector will feel the pinch of higher feed costs, and which are you most optimistic about in spite of higher feed costs?
Well, the delayed reaction is what I think people need to be aware of. So initially, markets have a hard time getting their muster up, so to speak, once the grain prices start to go higher. But deferreds respond. So we're seeing that already with deferred hogs. We're seeing the deferred cattle respond. And as far as the milk markets go, that right now is a different beast. So the milk has record production. So you really need to understand that United States, we have record production of milk. And if it weren't for the farm to family food program, milk prices, quite frankly, would be in the toilet. But thankfully, the USDA has continued to put that program forward into 2021. And that's been wonderfully supportive of all the dairy markets. And that's what made milk go from $15 up to $20, which just in a matter of 2 weeks' time. So as long as that program continues, you're going to see the milk market supported right now for the short term. And that's a bigger factor than the feed for right now for milk. So we'll see what the new administration does with that farm to family food program, if they can continue it. But again, the theme for the dairy market is huge production. Exports are doing well, and the demand is because of that farm to family food program.
All right. Since I've gone over 12 minutes, I have to contractually say, Tiffany, I'm sorry. And I'm going to now let everybody answer one word. Which market in 2021 has the most profitability ahead? You can pick any market you want, any commodity or livestock. Don Rose, in 2021, which one has the biggest profitability?
Well, for the input cost that you have, I would pick soybeans.
All right. Matt Bennett, what would you pick?
For the same reason, the same answer.
Okay. Naomi, anything different?
I like Minneapolis wheat. I think that that market is going to start to shoot higher because it's going to lose acres.
Ted shook his head no on that.
I thought Naomi was going to say cheese. But, okay, no, new crop soybeans. There you go.
All right. Ted Seifert, Don Rose, Matt Bennett, Naomi Bloom, you four, thank you so much. These are always a great insight, and I appreciate all of your knowledge that you give to all of us. Thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, that'll do it for Market Plus. Next week, we'll look at the acreage battle from the cotton perspective. And Chris Robinson will be here to break down the commodity markets. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for watching, listening, or reading. Have yourselves a great week.